Om Gyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svabhidantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamischa Shri Rupam Sajjatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadha Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai Gaura Premanandi So I feel very fortunate to be able to give a talk here in front of all the exalted Vaishnavas. Chaupati is well known for being a very learned centre. So please excuse my shortcomings. So there's one nice verse. Vairagya Vidya, Nija Bhakti Yoga. Shikshatham Eka Purusha Purana. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Shariradari. Kripambodhya Yastram Aham Prapadjate. So this is explaining the reason for Lord Chaitanya's descent. He appears to teach us three things. Actually, not just Lord Chaitanya, but two of these things are very much spoken through all the Vedas. One is knowledge. The Vedas give knowledge. And with that knowledge, then one is supposed to become detached, vairagya, detached from this world. But it also, Lord Chaitanya in particular, stresses another point, Nija Bhakti Yoga. So that means his own devotional service. It means he's teaching personally how he should be worshipped by his personal example. They give an example of how at school, in a good school, then there's personal contact between the teachers and the students. So the teacher will sometimes, if a student is struggling, he'll personally get hold of the pen of the student and show him how to write the alphabet. So in the same way, Lord Chaitanya is personally appearing in this world just for that reason. He personally takes on all the burden of spreading Krishna consciousness by his own example. But this, in the Vedas, there's a great leaning towards impersonalism. If we read the Upanishads, for instance, unless we have Prabhupada's purports, it's very difficult to understand what they actually mean. Actually, it sounds more like impersonalism than personalism. Sometimes when we read Bhagavad Gita, actually I was once visiting, I used to go door to door in Manchester, and I visited one door, and he was a university professor, and he was reading the Vedas, and he used to teach on Madhavacharya. And I thought, this is probably above my stage, he's probably too intelligent for me. But he invited me in, and we used to speak and discuss philosophy. He was a very, very pious person. But he said, I can't understand. I've been really in Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, but I can't really agree with the Prabhupada's Gita, because it says the absolute truth. This is what it says in the translation. And the param Ishvara, Bhagavan, mentions so many different names of Krishna. He says, but when I read in the purport, it says that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But it doesn't say that in the translation. So this is the difficulty, that we can perform, we can acquire knowledge by reading the books and taking association of those who are practicing that process. And from that we can get renunciation. But we can't get devotional service. Devotional service is only by contact with a devotee. And this is why Lord Chaitanya appeared. He appeared personally, Nidja Bhakti Yoga, to give his own devotional service. And he shows that example by when he goes throughout India. And when the devotees, when different people saw him dancing, they immediately felt devotion. They became absorbed in ecstasy. I was once speaking to my temple president. We were having a difficulty preaching in that particular area at the time. We have so many ways of trying to preach. And he came to the conclusion, he says, it's got to be by contact with a devotee that people actually become attracted. So this is a fact. We can read so many things, but that really doesn't make any difference to our life unless we contact a devotee. And then we have things explained by that devotee's why. I said the other day, I gave class about how bhakti, devotion, is independent. And that independence, the bhakti in the heart of a devotee, by his mercy, is given to someone else. It's not by any other process. Unless we have that little bit of devotional service, then we can't give it. We can't give what we haven't got. So this is a very, very personal process. Nidja Bhakti Yoga that Lord Chaitanya has come to give us. And so Lord Chaitanya doesn't do everything on his own. This is a very great thing, a very important thing to learn in the descent of Panchatattva. He called his associates Krishna Varanam Tuisa Krishnam Sanglo Pangashta Parshadam Yagyar Sankatan Priyaye Yajanti Hisa Medasa. That, you know, those who are intelligent, they will take to this process of devotional service. And that person who is delivering this process is accompanied by what? Sangha is a friend. Sangha, upanga, associates. His weapon and his confidential companions. What's Lord Chaitanya's weapon? The holy name. Hands up, we'll say the holy name. Hands up who don't agree with that. Actually, Lord Chaitanya's weapon is the holy name in one respect, but it says it's his beauty. It's Lord Chaitanya's beauty which is his weapon. It's so beautiful. I remember one devotee was, they called him Namahatta. He was a Sankirtan devotee, very good Sankirtan devotee. He used to do door-to-door. That's why I knew him, because I used to listen to his tapes, because he was very expert. He could go anywhere and do huge amounts of books. He used to, in those places in Italy, you couldn't get direct access to the house. It's all flats. So he used to go to the door, ring the bell, and then somebody used to answer, what's it, what people are going to say? Who's there? It's a Hare Krishna monk. No, thank you. This is what they say in the West. In the East, it might be different, in India. And so he used to ring the bell. Who's there? Delivery. I didn't order a delivery. Oh, yes, what are you delivering? Books. Okay, and they used to let him in. And he was in the flats then. He used to do all the flats and do many, many books. But anyway, coming back to the point, is that after a few years, he won the marathon in the West for many, many years. He was just so potent. And if you listen to his classes, you can see he's just focused on Sankirtan all the time. And he, from his previous, before he came to devotional service, he contracted a dormant disease called AIDS. And this disease started to manifest after he'd been practicing devotional service for some time. And then, obviously, AIDS is incurable, so he came to a stage where he knew that he was very shortly going to leave his body, so he went to Vrindavan. And there, he didn't have anywhere to go. One very nice devotee from Germany, Prithu Prabhu, he allowed him to stay in his ashram. And he was taking care of him. And he says, but one day, he was in a very weak state, very thin. He couldn't even sit up. And one day, he just saw his eyes open, and his eyes shone very brightly. And then he sat up, and then he went back down again. And then he just said, Sri Sri Gornitai, Magnifico Darshan. And like an Italian, this is what Bellissimo they. So actually he got sight of Lord Chaitanya. The point I'm making is that it's Lord Chaitanya's beauty, not just his physical beauty, but also by his actions, which are very beautiful. He's attracting all conditioned souls. So this is Lord Chaitanya's specific gift to the Kali Yuga. We need Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So Panchatattva, we were saying that the Lord descends with his confidential companions. So why Panchatattva? Lord Chaitanya, what is it? Lord Chaitanya is non-different from Radha and Krishna. What's that verse? Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna, Naihanya. There's no difference. So when Lord Krishna appears, he does appear with his entourage, but specifically we just have Radha Krishna on the deity, on the altar, sorry. So why does Lord Chaitanya bring four other associates, Panchatattva? Has anybody got any answers? Is it everybody shy or nobody knows? It's a good question, isn't it? He could come on his own, he's powerful. He could just spread the holy name. I see he took sannyas and he left the Panchatattva. He went travelling through South India. He had one servant. So why does he appear with those other four associates? Well, at that time, impersonalism had become very, very prominent. And also, Lord Chaitanya is omniscient. He knows past, present and future. He knew that very shortly, by his desire actually, that this impersonalist philosophy would be spread throughout India, and this would also go beyond the boundaries of Bharat to the rest of the world, this impersonalism. He personally inaugurated it through Lord Shiva, through Shankaracharya. This was the direct instruction of Lord Chaitanya. So this is another point actually we're going on to, how impersonalism spread. That was for another reason. But the Panchatattva comes specifically to defeat impersonalist philosophy. You know, impersonalists will, Mayavadis, they'll read the Bhagavad Gita and they can get so many meanings from Bhagavad Gita. Ishupanishads, no problem. They can read many, many books and it's impersonal. Bhagavatam, they try to read Bhagavatam, but it's very difficult for them to, after some time, they find it difficult to interpret him personally. But they never go near the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. Why? It's full of relationships. And that's what when Panchatattva, this is showing the relationships of the Lord with the different kinds of living entities. Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam, Bhakta Rupa Svarupakam, Bhakta Avataram Bhaktyakam, Namami Bhakta Shaktikam. So Bhakta Rupa, this is Lord Chaitanya, the original form of Godhead. Bhakta Swarupa, this is who? Lord Nityananda, expansion of the Lord. So there's a relationship there. Actually, Lord Nityananda is the best servitor of Lord Chaitanya. He's as powerful as Lord Chaitanya in theory, but he never takes the role of being proud. He's always wanting to serve Lord Chaitanya. He took the role of serving Lord Chaitanya in Ramlila. Ramlila, was it? Lakshman. He took the role of his servant, but he didn't like that position. He found that he got into so much difficulty being a servant. And so in the next one, he took the position of Lord Chaitanya's elder brother. Now he could actually say what... He had a bit of more power to say what... happened. So the next, what's the Bhakta Svarupa, what's the next? back to Avatara. Who's this Lord? Advaita Acharya. Back to Avatara. Bhaktyakam. And then the next one is Gadada. He's Bhakta Shaktikam. Bhakta Avatara. Bhakta Srupa Shaktikam. And then the last one is Srivas, who's the devotional energy of the Lord. So the relationship with his internal potency, a relationship with his external potency through Srivas, a relationship with Mahavishnu through Advaita Acharya, and a relationship with Lord Nityananda. Everything's there. We see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, these every page is filled with different relationships. This is why people like to read Chaitanya Charitamrita. Is that right? What are you reading, Prabhu? After you've been in the movement a few years, Chaitanya Charitamrita. Why are you reading that? It's nectar. Why not Bhagavad Gita? Oh, I know Bhagavad Gita. But actually, we have to understand Bhagavad Gita properly before we can move on to understand Chaitanya Charitamrita properly. So where did we get to? We're on to Panchatattva. So they're showing us how to practice this third process, not vairagya, not knowledge, but devotional service. So what's the essence of devotional service? We've said one thing, it's relationships. If there's no relationships, what's the meaning to devotional service? That relationship between Krishna, who's in the center, means that we supply, just like we supply food to the body, make the body the center, then all the limbs of the body are nourished. So by satisfying Krishna, we satisfy all the living entities. So relationships are there when we develop that relationship with Krishna. So what's another one? What's another essence of devotional service? Essence of devotional service. Prabhupada gave some four things. Books are the basis. Utility is the principle. And preaching is the essence. What's for the last one? Hey? Purity is the force, that's right. Purity is the force. That's what the devotee was just saying before. So preaching, this is what I thought we'd speak about. Actually, Panchatattva, they were the first deities I saw. I started to go to the Manchester temple at the weekends, and then the temple president said, why don't you go to the big temple in Birmingham? They have deities there, you can see the deities firsthand. You can get a bit more of a taste for devotional service. So that weekend phoned up, and they said you can stay over the weekend. And then after I'd been there and they'd fed me, and they said, would you like to see the deities? Yes, that's what I've come for. At that time, I'd only been practicing devotional service a month or two. I'd heard of Lord Chaitanya, but I didn't really understand much about the philosophy. And then when I walked into the temple room, I got the shock of my life. I was expecting to see who on the altar? Radha Krishna. But there were five people on the altar. And I just thought, have I come to the right place? And the one on the end, he's got a beard. And the temple president had asked me to shave my beard off the week before. I thought that. So, anyway, this was Panchatattva. So we can all develop that relationship with Panchatattva. This is the point. That relationship is developed through preaching. Maybe if we have time at the end, I can tell you a story about Panchatattva. It doesn't necessarily have to be preaching, but by surrender to Panchatattva. But preaching is the essence, and Panchatattva are very much showing us how to develop those relationships with Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya personally also has pastimes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and in these pastimes he's showing us the different ways we can preach. It may not always appear like that. These pastimes are 500 years ago, it was in India. The whole climate is completely different from that. Well, not so much in India, in the countryside, but in the city like Bombay, there's no difference from the West. Actually, it's probably a bigger city than London. So the same things are here. Maybe people are more cultured for the time being. Well, Kali Yuga's coming fast. In England, we can see the Indians changing. They're becoming more and more westernized. And so what's the significance of the preaching that Lord Chaitanya did? Is it applicable now? It was a completely different situation. So he preached to four... I've got it written down here. I can't remember. But there's four kinds of people Lord Chaitanya preached to. One is called the Kuti Kikas. And these are called the logicians. So who's the logician in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita? Are you sure? Yes, he's Salvabhama Bhattacharya. So he showed a certain mood with Salvabhama Bhattacharya. How did he preach to Salvabhama? What one quality would you say he showed to Salvabhama Bhattacharya? Humility. Well, that may be there, but if we remember, Salvabhama, what do we do when we meet somebody who's... Like when I met that scholar in Manchester, when I went to his door and he said, I'm a university professor in Indology. I thought, oh. And immediately I felt, what? What's one thing that you feel when somebody's advancing a field? Some respect. And so Lord Chaitanya also... So this person is respected throughout the whole of India. He could have just defeated him on the spot within a few sentences. But what did he do? He went to so much trouble. He even listened to Salvabhama Bhattacharya. He didn't speak a word for 7 days and he listened to what he had to say. And then Salvabhama was preaching away and he thought, there's something not quite right here. He's not asked one question. And so then after 7 days he said, are you understanding what I'm saying? Do you understand this Vedanta philosophy? And Lord Chaitanya said, yes, I understand Vedanta philosophy, but I don't understand what you're talking about. And so Salvabhama said, oh, please tell me what... And so then Lord Chaitanya started to explain the Vaishnava understanding of Vedanta philosophy. And so actually Salvabhama Bhattacharya became convinced. But it wasn't just by his logical analysis. It was the way Lord Chaitanya preached to him. He gave him room to express himself, and then he put his own opinion forward. So this is one thing we can learn from Lord Chaitanya, is that especially if we're preaching to people in high positions, then that respect has to be there. We may know more than them. Even the youngest bhakta in devotional service, he knows far more than any great logician in the material world. But we shouldn't take this, you know, we shouldn't use that. We should always have respect for people who are in high positions in society. Prabhupada actually said that when his young devotees, when they first came to India, and they were trying to preach and spread Krishna consciousness, and they said they'd met a very powerful industrialist or somebody who was doing well in the materials field. He says, we have to be very careful with them. And the devotees didn't understand at first. He says, they have got that position due to, by Krishna's mercy, piety. They've earned that position. And therefore, also the position itself warrants respect in this society. If a devotee doesn't show it, where are you going to go? So I say, Radhanath Swami is very good at using this particular attribute. I saw him on the television. Has anybody seen that on the television about preaching in the House of Commons in England? But he was very, very respectful to these MPs. And you could see by the look on their faces afterwards, they were very, very much influenced. One of the MPs, he came to Mayapur after hearing Radhanath Swami. He's been cultivated a little bit by the temple at Bhaktivedanta Manor. He's an Indian, but he's in charge of one constituency. That means an MP who has a seat in Parliament. And he's what they call the chief whip. Do you have chief whips in India? Chief whip means that he whips everybody. Get in there. He makes sure that everybody attends when there's a vote. So very important. He's not just a member of Parliament. He's one of the cabinet. So this person, he was so... what can you say? So impressed that he came with the temple president and a few other senior devotees from Bhaktivedanta Manor, and he spent about 5 or 6 days in Mayapur, and a very good speaker, very intelligent person. So this is what we need. Prabhupada said if we make one leading person Krishna conscious, it preaches to so many people. Yad yada charity stresses. Tad tad avatara jana. Lokas tad anuvartate. In other words, one very, whatever actions are performed by a great man, what will happen? Many people will follow. We see it, don't we? Everybody wears what the film stars wear. It's just a natural tendency. This is the nature of the living entity. The living entity doesn't want to be a leader, actually. He adores worshipping somebody. This is our natural propensity. But we are very fortunate. We don't have to worship all, or, as Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, cowtail to all these big guns. They're not really big guns. Krishna's the big gun. And so we've got that opportunity. So this is Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. We respect people in society, and automatically people will respect what we have to say. So that's one class that Lord Chaitanya showed us how to preach to. Another class is called the Nindarkas. Has anybody heard of a Nindarka? Offenders. Very good. Offenders. You found it. Yeah, offenders. Who's the offenders in Chaitanya Chaitamrita? The Mayavadis, yeah. Yeah, Prakashananda Sarasvati, he was very powerful. He had 10,000 disciples. And Lord Chaitanya went to Varanasi. He stayed with Chandrasekhar and Tapana Mishra. And because he was dressed as a sannyasi and he wasn't doing what the other Mayavad sannyasis were doing, they started to criticize. And Tapana Mishra and Chandrasekhar, they couldn't actually take it. They came to Lord Chaitanya and they told him that, you know, these people are using bad words against you. We don't like it. And so Lord Chaitanya, he told them not to worry about it. But then they came again and they asked the Lord to do something. But anyway, the Lord arranged that one Brahman invited all the sannyasis to one house. And also that Lord Chaitanya was invited. And this is where he showed another quality. When he came into the house, all the sannyasis were there, very respectable, very learned. And when he came in, his natural effulgence, they were all completely overpowered by it. And they understood, actually, this is Narayan. Their philosophy is, we're all Narayan. Does that ring a bell with anybody? When you come to India, it's very prominent. I don't know whether the local devotees find this a very prominent thing, but when you preach to an Indian in the West, he'll start talking, and he'll start talking about, oh yes, Krishna, oh yes, Lord Shiva, oh yes, Brahma, and then he's got everybody on the altar. And then at the back of it all, they're all one. And so this is the situation, is that these Mayavadis were thinking, I see, this person's achieved perfection. He's completely effulgent. But why is he sat in that dirty place? So this is another quality that a devotee has to learn, that even though we may be qualified like Lord Chaitanya, nobody ever will be, but if we're very qualified, we don't become proud. But we take the humble, he showed humility. And then by that humility, Prakashananda Sarasvati went over to him. My good sir, why are you sat there in this dirty place? Please come. And he pulled him up personally. This is the head of all the Mayavadis, 10,000 disciples, personally went. And then they started discussing. Why are you, and then they asked, you know, why are you dancing like a madman? Ekadanda Sannyasi. Why are you dancing like a madman? Why, you should be studying Vedanta. This is an important point here. What did Lord Chaitanya say? It is called indirect preaching. The mother preach to the daughter-in-law? Everybody should know this one. What do? They're both in the kitchen, and she sees that her daughter-in-law's, she's not rolling chapatis properly. So what does she do? Look, come here. You watch me. This is how you roll them. No. What would be the result? You know, that relationship between daughter and daughter-in-law, it can be a tricky one. And a thing like that wouldn't make it any better. So naturally, what does she do? She sees her daughter in the kitchen rolling chapatis. What are you doing? You're rolling those chapatis wrong. What? No, I'm rolling them. And then she takes the rolling pin and shows her how to roll. And then who's watching? Daughter-in-law. So this is intelligent preaching. So this is what Lord Chaitanya did in this situation. They asked him a question. Why are you chanting and dancing like a madman? Why don't you study Vedanta Foster? He immediately said, my spiritual master told me I'm not intelligent enough to read Vedanta philosophy. And they're all calling him Narayan. They can see he's an advanced. How would they feel? How would you feel? Somebody very qualified said he's not qualified for something you are trying to do. What would it make you feel like? You feel, where does that put me? He's not qualified. Why am I studying? And so then they started to open up. And as Lord Chaitanya began to preach and open up their philosophy, they became more and more absorbed in what he was saying. So he didn't have to deal with them head on. He did it in a very subtle way. It never works head on, does it? Very, very rarely. So two cases where he went the indirect way. So a devotee has to be in the mode of goodness, controlling his situation, controlling himself. In control of the situation, then we can control the preaching. So another class of preaching. What's the other class of preaching? This is called Adharma Paduyas. Actually, we'll do the other one first, just a minute. These are called the Pashandis. Who's the Pashandis? Atheists. Who's the atheists in Chaitanya Chaitamrita? We're talking about the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. Buddhists. They are atheists, but I wasn't thinking of the Buddhists. It's actually non-devotees. Non-devotees. Who's the non-devotees? Jagaya Madai. They were definitely non-devotees. You couldn't get more non-devotee than they were. They did everything. You name it, they did it. And so, what quality did he show to the Pashandis? How did Lord Chaitanya preach? What quality did he show? Everybody knows. We've just had the story. Compassion, he was very magnanimous. Actually, it was Nityananda who was initially magnanimous. We can't reach Lord Chaitanya unless we get the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And they both got the mercy of Lord Nityananda. He wanted to kill them. He got his Sudarshan Chakra. He was ready. And Lord Nityananda said, if you kill them, you have to kill everybody in the Kali Yuga. They're all like this. And so then we have to kill. So Lord Chaitanya appears to kill the mentality. So this is great compassion. To preach is not an easy thing. You know, just we think, okay, we have to put ourselves out, put ourselves into a difficult situation, preach to people who are not interested. But actually, when we really get into preaching on an ongoing basis, it's very, very difficult. When you're dealing with people on an ongoing basis, that's when preaching becomes very, we have to be very, very devoted to preaching, actually. Very, very merciful. Because it says in the Kali Yuga, it says in the Bhagavad Gita that the devotee risks everything to preach. Is that right? Does anybody remember that sentence from one of the paragraphs of Bhagavad Gita? I can't remember the verse, but it says the devotee is more magnanimous than the Lord. Because he knows the purpose of the Lord. Although these people are very... It's very difficult to deal with materialistic people. Why is it very difficult to deal with materialistic people? What's the threat to the devotee? There's no threat to a pure devotee, actually. Because a pure devotee is completely surrendered to Krishna. He's completely protected by Krishna. But this is a very, very advanced situation. But it's a Madhyam Adhikari who may be not on that platform who has to preach. He can see, he can discriminate so they can, he can preach. But it's a very, very risky situation. What's the risk? We may be affected by them. We may become materialists if we're not careful. And so a devotee has to be very, very careful and merciful at the same time. And also when you're dealing with somebody who's antagonistic, what happens to you? It starts here. Then it comes here. Then it comes here. Then it goes, it's out. What's this? We become angry. This is a, actually, this is not a Vaishnava way of dealing with anger. In the there's certain books, I'll not mention here, but they tell you how to deal with anger, stress management, anger. And they say, if you can first understand you're becoming angry when? When you feel some irritation in the stomach, and then it starts to creep up, we feel the anger coming up, and then eventually it's out. And you can't retract it anymore. What's being said is being said. But a devotee can deal with anger in a much better way. He can understand the situation which will make him happy. And why that situation makes him happy. What is that? What is it? A one-off question. What makes us angry? Bhagavad Gita. Attachment. Any attachment. If we become angry, we should think, now why have I become angry? And there's some subtle attachment there. Anyways, this is a danger of preaching to Pashandis. So a devotee has to be what? To preach, he has to be very, very strong. Very fixed up in devotional service. And the last one, what will the last one be? Any guesses for the last one? We shouldn't guess, actually. We should know. Prabhupada, when Prabhupada was once asking devotee, it was on a morning walk, this devotee called him Rohini Nandan, he's a Prabhupada disciple. And he was very intelligent, actually, from university, got a high pass mark, and he'd just joined. He'd been very quickly made progress. Prabhupada was asking about a certain question, and he said, Prabhupada, I think, and Prabhupada, he really blasted him, what do you think? You don't think anything. He said, you should know. And so after that, he never thought again. So, yeah, we're dealing with the last one. The Adama Pudayas. We've probably got quite a few in here. They call the degraded students. Anyway, maybe not degraded, but students. So, what's the pastime which deals with the Adama Paduyas? What particular devotee in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita is an epitome of a student? Kala Krishnadas, no? No? It's the Makunda. Why? Because what does a student do? He learns many different things, so many things. Different students, there's so many different university degrees now. Everything's different, what we learn in this world. So many different philosophies. And so Makunda was like that also. He would, this is a pastime of course, he was a pure devotee. But for the purpose of the pastime, he used to be seen as a very, what can you say, like a chameleon. Anybody know what a chameleon is? What's the symptom of a chameleon? Changes colour. And so he used to go to one particular mat and they'd be expressing some philosophy. Oh, very good. Very good. Then he'd go to another mat, they're expressing another type of philosophy. Oh, this is first class. And then he'd go somewhere, and then he'd probably go to the Mayavadis and say, oh, very good. He'd agree with everybody, just like a chameleon. And Lord Chaitanya became aware of this through the grapevine. And he said, and he became extremely angry. He said, tell Makunda, I don't want to see his face around here again. Ever again. And all the devotees knew what a great devotee Mukunda actually was, and they were very upset. And Mukunda, they told Mukunda, actually Mukunda could hear. And they actually pleaded with Lord Chaitanya. It's, you know, the devotees are seen as being more merciful than the Lord, as Bhagavad Gita said. So they approached the Lord and said, surely you'll tell us when you will see Mukunda. When will you see the Mukunda? At some point, surely you'll actually give him your darshan. And Lord Chaitanya relented. He said, okay, tell Mukunda I will see him after 10,000 births. And what would you do if you heard that Lord Chaitanya would see you after 10,000 births? Jai! Would you be like that? But Mukunda, he was in the next room, he could hear what Lord Chaitanya said, and he jumped up, I will see, and he was dancing in ecstasy. I will see Lord Chaitanya in 10,000 births. So immediately Lord Chaitanya started to smile, and he said, bring Mukunda here, and immediately embraced him. So what was shown there by that pastime? Shows that actually we have to remain chaste to our own philosophy. Don't become too entangled in other philosophies. It can actually divert us. And also Lord Chaitanya, when he heard that somebody was becoming attached to other philosophies, he avoided that person. He was indifferent towards him. So we should be careful about, it says, Mayavadi Bhashya Shunile Hayam Saravanash. If we hear Mayavad philosophy, what happens? It can completely take away our intelligence, even of a very advanced devotee. Okay, so this is we four things that we can learn from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. How Lord Chaitanya showed us how to preach. What are those things? Sarvabhauma and Bhattacharya, by showing respect. Next one, by Jagaya Madai, by being merciful, respect, mercy. Mukunda, by not becoming too entangled in somebody else's philosophy. Prabhupada said, when somebody's preaching on philosophy, he wouldn't get into their philosophy. When he was doing Shyama Sundari was starting the book about different philosophies. And he used to come to Prabhupada and ask him about a certain philosopher. What do you think to Plato? What do you think to Sartre? What do you think to this person? And what would Prabhupada say? He'd say, what is his philosophy? Then when that philosophy was explained, he would view that philosophy from Vaishnava philosophy and assess it. So we don't get into their philosophy. We assess it from our... We listen to them, like you listen to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And then we assess. And then we deal with the Vaishnava philosophy. And then we don't become like a chameleon. And what's the last one? I've forgotten myself. Oh, the Nindarkas, the Prashandis, the atheists. So that's more of an indirect process. Just remember the mother and the mother-in-law, that we don't go straight in, but try and avoid that. Okay, so so what's the mood of our disciplic succession? Has anybody done any study courses lately? When I went to the VIHE, that's the Vaishnav Institute for Higher Education, now they have an MIHE, now they use a certain study structure. They don't use it so much at the VIHE, but they use it very much at the MIHE. And they have certain ingredients that should be in every essay that we write and every action that we perform when we're studying. If we write an essay, then they look, is this in there? Is this in there? Does anybody know what they are? How does it teach us to see through Shastra Chakshu? How can we see through Shastra? What is it to my personal preaching application? How does it affect me personally, personal application? What's the mood and mission of this particular essay or this part of the Bhagavad Gita? So this is the one I was bringing up, is that if we read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, we can understand Prabhupada's mood and mission. And so it's important that we understand Prabhupada's moods and mission with relation to the descent of Lord Chaitanya. We may think that this is a straightforward thing, but it says that India is the lame man of the world. It's coming up a little bit. We're getting a bit more strength. And at least materially, we're starting to get a sea legs together. I mean, not so much. And America's the what? Or it used to be. I think they're going down now. They used to be the brain, the head. So why is India the lame man? Well, it said that Bharatvarsh, he used to last from the other side of Pakistan, West Pakistan now they call it. It used to be India, Kashmir, huge. Then he used to go down through what is now Bangladesh, through Assam, down through Burma, down through Thailand, Cambodia, all that area, across the sea to these islands, Sumatra, Borneo. That used to be Bharat. And so why, and you know, it's like we hear in the Shastras how, you know, there's so much opulence. They were so powerful. It was the center of the crest jewel of the earth. All the rest of the world was ruled from Hastinapur. Such a powerful place. I mean, look now. It's receding. And, you know, everywhere there's poverty. When I first came to India, that's one of the first things that shocked me. Couldn't believe it. Got off at the airport, came out of the airport. There were just rows of people laid on the pavement. It doesn't happen in the rest of the world. So why has Bharat been reduced to this, you know, situation? It shouldn't be like that. This is not natural. And it's just like this, that if a young boy or somebody who's 2 or 3 years old makes an elementary mistake, then the parents say, oh, he's only 2 or 3 years old. He's got to learn. It's not such, you know, just show him how to do it properly. But, you know, learning to speak, he makes some mistake in speaking. Not such a big thing. Or he's just learning to walk. Then same child at 15 years old makes the same mistake. What does the parents do then? He starts talking like a child at 3 years old. They'll severely admonish him. Why are you playing at? Why are you speaking like that? And so this is the same with India. To take birth in the land of India means that it's took a lot of effort, a lot of piety in the past. We've gradually come to this higher birth. But what is a higher birth meant for? This is the modern mission. The higher birth is meant to give it to others. We're not supposed to keep it. Not only, so this is what happened. Bharat, except for Srila Prabhupada, nothing came out of India anymore. And so because there's no preaching going on, India's suffering like anything. And now there's materialism coming from the West and influence India. So it's not just a case that we can take it or leave it, this preaching mood. It's actually a very, very important aspect, even for our own well-being. So anyway, the time's going on. So we are known as Prabhupada Anugas. And we're the followers of, and he's the follower of Rupa Nuga. So we're followers of Rupa Goswami. So when we think about the Goswamis, what do we think about when we think about the Goswamis? What's your picture in the mind when you think about the Goswamis? Let's have some answers. Hey? I ain't got very good ears. Role model. So what is that role model? What example would you say they set? Absorption in Krishna. That's a good one, isn't it? What else? Simplicity. Surrender. Any more? Determination. Krishna Bhakti. Actually, when I came away from the VIHE last time, they gave us a bead bag. And on it was Rupa Goswami. I don't know whether it was Rupa Goswami or Sanatana Goswami. But there was one of the Goswamis sat in a crouched position with a quill in his hand and writing. And I thought, yeah, this is the perfect, this is just how I imagined a Goswami. Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipano, Sad Dharma Sanstarpano. Lord Chaitanya said, scrutinize and study the revealed scriptures and get the essence from them. with the aim of giving Krishna consciousness to everybody. But I say, if we really look into those first four verses of the Goswami Astika, and we see that, I say, that's part of their mood. What is their mood? Krishna Kirtana Gyananataparo Premamritambo Nidhi Dira Dira Jinapriya Priya Karo Niramatsaro Purito Sri Chaitanya Kripa Bhuvi Bhavo Barha Varanta Karo. What's the essence of what that's saying? They were always singing and dancing in ecstasy, the names of Krishna. I never thought of the Goswamis as doing that. They were always singing and they were performing sankirtan. And they were very, and by that process, they were very pure. And therefore, even the non-devotees were attracted to them. They were showing us how to become, how to preach by chanting and dancing, by distributing Krishna consciousness. But the other thing is that he says they were, what was the one qualification in that verse that allowed them to preach? Eh? They were non-envious, but there's another one it says in the translation. They were fully blessed by Lord Chaitanya. Without the blessings of Lord Chaitanya, we cannot preach. Without the blessings of our authorities, we cannot preach. Without the blessings of Prabhupada, we cannot preach. The blessings are coming. They're already here. This is our benediction. But are we taking those blessings? We may think, oh, I can't preach in this situation. I can't do so many things. But the blessings are already there. A devotee just has to go out and do it like the Goswamis. Next verse. Nana Shastra Vichara Naikinipando Saddharma Sanstarpako Lokanam Hita Karinu Tribhuvane Manyosha Ranya Karo Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana Anandina Mataliko. And so they were worth taking shelter of, because they were non-envious and they were preaching, because they were studying the Shastras themselves, becoming purified, and then we can be a shelter for somebody else. So first of all, kirtan, getting the blessings, then we get the respect of everybody, and then by studying the Shastra, then we can become a shelter for others. And what's the next one? Next verse. Sri Gauranga Gurana Varnana Vido. Papo Tapa Nikrintana Tanubitam. What's it? Govinda Ganamritai. Anandam Bodhivara Nipano. Kaivalya Nistarako. And so they understood this mood and mission. This is what they were conversant with understanding the mood of Lord, very expert in understanding Lord Chaitanya's mood. So we have to be very expert at understanding Prabhupada's mood, Lord Chaitanya's mood. If we understand Prabhupada's new mood, we understand all the disciplic succession's mood. So how can we understand Prabhupada's mood? When he came from India, determination, somebody said, one of the qualities of the six Goswamis. What about Prabhupada's determination? 40 years. 40 years he was given the direction, preach in the Western-speaking world. And he never forgot that instruction. He went through so many difficulties. He eventually had to leave his family. He lived in Vrindavan. He was almost penniless. He was using whatever money he had to print magazines, to get them printed, distribute them himself. He had a great difficulty getting out of India. They didn't want to send him. Swamiji, you'll die out there. You won't survive. But he was determined, if that's what I have to do, then I'm prepared to die to fulfill this mission. And he eventually got clearance from the Scindia Steamship Company to go on one of their boats after a great perseverance. And halfway across the Arabian Sea, heart attack. Two heart attacks. One heart attack is enough to stop anybody from going any further. And then he crossed over to America. And what did he see? Boston Pier Harbor. First place he stopped before they went to New York. The Captain Pandya, he took Prabhupada for a ride in the city. And when Prabhupada came back, he'd witnessed the Western way of life. He says, when you cook, Mataji's, when you cook rice, how do you know the rice is done? Do you put your hand in, you have to feel every piece? No, you just took one and you squeeze it. Oh yes, this is done. So you could see by this sample in Boston, what a difficult situation. And so he came back to the ship and he wrote one poem. Bhagavat Mark Indarm, preaching Krishna consciousness in the West. I haven't got that prayer here, it'd be very nice to read it actually. But Prabhupada is pouring out his heart to the Lord. My Lord, they're fully absorbed in ignorance and passion. You know, how will they be delivered? How can I deliver them? But you've brought me here to deliver them. Somehow or other, there must be a process. Therefore, if you want me to deliver them, make me a puppet. Make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. Oh Lord, make me dance, as you like. And so this is the mood of preaching. If we think we can preach, then we won't be very successful. Prabhupada, he'd been preparing for 40 years and he got the shock of his life. So he wrote the poem, I don't know what to do. And so what did he do? How did he tackle that situation? When he got off in New York, he said he didn't know whether to turn left or right. So eventually he met one courier who had been sent. He was driving through, he went to Butler, Pennsylvania, and he stayed with the Agarwal family. And he just stayed watching their homely life and observing their friends. So this is the first thing, is that if we want to make any impression on society, with a friend or in general, then we have to know where they're at, what we need to do. Prabhupada did this. So these are just some thoughts anyway. So what was Prabhupada's mood preaching? So have we any pastimes which emphasize this mood? Can anybody think of any pastimes? What about when he was writing the Chaitanya Chaitamrita? He was having a bit of competition with the printers, and Prabhupada was winning, hands down. And he'd almost finished the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. And I think they'd finished three volumes or something like that. And Prabhupada didn't feel encouraged to do any more translating. He actually cornered them, the book trust, the people who were running the printing press. I think it was Rameshwar was one of them, and Radha Vallabha. And they were on a morning walk, and said, so, and he was talking about, you know, increasing the book production. And he said, and he was walking and putting his cane forward. He said, so, what is the answer? We have to print more books, Prabhupada, more quickly. What can you manage? We may be able to manage one book a month, Prabhupada. Not good enough. And so then Prabhupada, so what do you suggest, Prabhupada? In 3 months, I want the whole Chaitanya Chaitamrita finishing. And immediately they blurted out, impossible, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada stopped. Said, this is impossible, is a word in a fool's dictionary. And so all the devotees were looking at these two, as if say, Prabhupada said it, you have to do it. So they hung back from the morning walk and they started discussing. And they started to work out how it could be done. So it requires this determination. And that's why we have to be pushed by higher authority. We have to be prepared to be pushed by the spiritual master. Otherwise it's very difficult. When we're feeling some pushing, it will help us to break through our barriers, through our comfort zone. And this is what happened to these two devotees. And so they worked out a plan so they could print more books. They had painters painting around the clock. If one, you know, they were painting like 12 hours at a time, sometimes 24 hours, the paintings for the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. Then one would fall, he'd fall asleep. So they would put him to one side and somebody else would finish that painting. They had to be detached. And they were just working round the clock, sleeping very little. And they worked out that, you know, by proper management, they could do it. So Prabhupada was right. Impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So many, many people think in the beginning of devotional service, especially, that preaching is just a little bit beyond my capacity. It's not. It's very, very simple when we get that mercy from Lord Chaitanya. A and the pushing from the spiritual master. Another example of Prabhupada's mood and mission, determination. He was talking to Hamsadutta, and the other devotee was Hamsadutta and Tamal Krishna Goswami, about his spiritual master, about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They were preaching in a temple at that time. They got a new temple in Bagh Bazar in Calcutta. And he was saying how, he was talking about the Vrindavan temple actually, how we should attract people to the temple. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said something very unusual. He said, if it will attract people to the temple, we should feed them meat. And when Prabhupada chuckled when he said this, and he was telling Tamal Krishna Goswami and Radha and Hamsadutta, and they looked shocked when Prabhupada said that, because all the philosophy is, you know, we don't deal with that sort of thing. And Prabhupada said, but the essence is there. We probably won't distribute meat, but we should be prepared to bend over backward to accommodate the conditioned souls, to get them a foothold in devotional service. So as devotees who are coming to the temple regularly, we should also see like that. We accommodate people. Very accommodating. Then they get a little bit of a taste, and then they can go further. Another point on the same line was when Prabhupada had one disciple called Harikesh, Harikesh Prabhu, and he was Prabhupada's secretary, and this is a proof that the spiritual master knows what's best for us. Sometimes when we get instructions from the spiritual master, it seems like some tall order, or this is not my propensity, or so many things might be going through the mind. But Prabhupada used to come very frequently tell Adikrishna Prabhu, he said, get out of my sight, go and preach. He used to be telling him to preach, you're wasting away here. But he wanted to stay with Prabhupada. He wanted to get Prabhupada's association, so he would never go. But once Prabhupada really lost his temper with him, and he forced him to leave, and almost sobbing, he said, go and preach in the eastern bloc, in Russia and the eastern part of Europe. So he went, and he was preaching in what was then Yugoslavia. And after some time, he got Prabhupada's darshan to bring his report. And he said, Prabhupada said, so, how was the preaching going? He says, very good. They are very receptive, Prabhupada. Oh, that's very good. They're taking so many books and many people coming to our programs. He says, but it's very difficult for us, Prabhupada. He says, we can't get anything to eat most of the time. It's all meat. Well, he didn't say that, actually. He said, it's very difficult to find some vegetarian food to eat. And Prabhupada was writing at the time when he was talking. He says, well, eat meat then. And thinking, did I hear him properly? He said, Prabhupada, it's very difficult to get something to eat. There's not much vegetarian produce. And Prabhupada again said, well, eat meat then. And so he asked him again, and Prabhupada said, yes, eat meat. He said, Prabhupada, what about my consciousness? And Prabhupada said, to hell with your consciousness. So Prabhupada was very much emphasizing, not that we should give up our we have to keep good consciousness, but but it's the point is priority is that this movement is meant for preaching. Everything should culminate in preaching, and if we have that mood, we'll always be enlivened in devotional service. There'll be no problems. We'll be too busy with other problems for our own problems. So I just thought I'd share that with you about Prabhupada's focus on mood and mission of ISKCON. Well, we had the other two. We had one more of the Goswami Astakam to one more verse. What's that verse? Anybody know that one? The fourth one. Chaktva Turnam Asesha Mandalapati Srinim Sata Stuchavat. Gopi Bhava. No, that's the third line. Yes. So what's the essence of this particular verse? It means that they gave up their comfortable position. What were they, Goswamis? Were they just ordinary people? We can't imagine how powerful they were. The King Hussein Shah. He was a very powerful king of all that part of eastern India. And he appointed, I think it was Sanan Goswami was his chief minister, and Rupa Goswami was his finance minister. Two most powerful posts. Why did he appoint them? Because he completely trusted them. They were so, what can you say, so expert in their particular field of activities. How did he acquire them? That's another story. But anyway, they were there. And can you imagine that one of, I don't know which one, I think it was Sanan Goswami, had enough gold to fill a huge boat. Even people nowadays, multi-millionaires, they don't have anywhere near that amount of wealth. He could do anything and anything he wanted. And yet, he just decided, Rupa Goswami came first, he just gave it up, just like stool. Rupa Goswami went with Lord Chaitanya. Then Sanan Goswami, a little later, he gave it up and went with Lord Chaitanya. And then what did he say? They took. Can you imagine? They accepted the exact opposite way of life, just wearing one loincloth and living under a different tree every night. Chakvaturnam asesha mandalipati srinim sada tuchivat. That kopina kantashvito, they just wore copings and they gave up. So in other words, this is also what a devotee has to do. He has to give up his, not necessarily give up his position in society. We can all serve Krishna through our particular propensity and our particular position. High positions are needed to influence high class people. But it's a mentality we give up, that this is not mine. We renounce that mentality. Everything's meant for Lord Chaitanya's pleasure. And this is where we can actually concentrate on giving Krishna consciousness. This is where we can become the humble servant. Because to preach, we need to become the actual servant. As shown by Lord Chaitanya, as we mentioned earlier. So, okay, so just got one. We can go a little bit further back, actually, than 500 years ago, because it used to. Before I read the Bhagavatam properly, I was trained in reading the Bhagavatam. I used to think it seems a little different, the two moods of Radha Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. Lord Radha Krishna, you worship in the temple, it's for the temple devotees. You know, people come, they see the deity, but that's usually after they've been brought to Krishna consciousness. It's like one is like all action, going out preaching, and so many things are happening, and the other one is sedate temple life. So, you know, what happened before Lord Chaitanya? What's Krishna's mood? And then we came to the 33rd chapter of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. And he was saying how when the gopis, they were becoming a little proud of dancing with Krishna in the Ras dance. That's the whole story, how they became proud. I don't think there's anybody proud in the spiritual world, is there? But anyway, they were. So Krishna took that as an excuse to leave their company. So immediately, when we have something very valuable and we lose it, what happens? We want that thing like anything. We regret we've lost something very. We realize we've lost something very valuable. They realize they'd lost Krishna's association. And so they started running here, there, everywhere, asking different living entities, have you seen Krishna? And they got negative results. So they took it for granted, we're not going to find Krishna. So they went to the banks of the Yamuna. And there they started reciting the Gopi Gita, the different verses of the 33rd chapter. but when they came to the 9th verse, what's that 9th verse? Kavakatam ritam tapta jivanam kavibhidetitam kalma sabaham shravana mangalam srimadatatam bhuvi grinantiye buridajana. So why do we recite this verse? What are they saying, the gopis, in that particular verse? They're saying that the nectar of your words, and the nectar of your pastimes, are the life and soul of those undergoing material existence in the material world. And then he goes on to say that, actually, this message is broadcasted by great devotees. So there's nobody more munificent than those who broadcast this message of Godhead. Buridajana. So this is completely opposite to the mood in the spiritual world, or it seems to be. Why did they recite that verse? They're talking about preaching. The nectar of your words. What's the nectar of Krishna's words? It's Bhagavad Gita. They're Krishna's words, aren't they? The nectar of songs about Krishna, what's that? Srimad Bhagavatam. So actually, the gopis, this is saying what the gopis' mood is. They're appreciating this preaching movement. And then 500 years ago, the same verse was recited by another great personality during the Rath Yatra festival. Maharaj Pratiparudra, he was a great king, very powerful king. He was the only part of India where the Muslims couldn't conquer. He was so powerful. But he wanted to see Lord Chaitanya because he was a great devotee of the Lord. But the Lord Chaitanya said, I don't mix with materialists, pound shillings and pence men. But actually, Lord Chaitanya's devotees are more kind than the Lord. So they arranged a situation where Maharaj Pratiparudra could see the Lord. And halfway through the Rath Yatra festival, the Lord stopped at one place and went into a garden to rest. They dressed King Pratiparudra in ordinary plain dhoti and tell him, go in now and see Abdarshan of the Lord. So he crept in and he started massaging the Lord's feet and reciting this Gopi Gita, what we've just been reciting. And the Lord was saying, go on reciting. He was in ecstasy. But then when he came to the ninth verse, Kavakatamritam, he jumped up in ecstasy and embraced the king. And he says, the Prabhupada writes in that purport that he says the king got all of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. He said Lord Chaitanya didn't even know who Maharaj Pratiparudra was. He says, but he immediately gave him all his mercy. Why? Because he was explaining the process of delivering the conditioned souls, of giving mercy to the conditioned souls. And Lord Chaitanya said, I cannot repay you for this. He says, you're the most munificent person. So this is Lord Chaitanya's mood also. This is why Lord Chaitanya appeared 500 years ago, for us to celebrate that. But the best way to celebrate Lord Chaitanya's appearance is to carry on that legacy that Lord Chaitanya has left us, and which was left for Srila Prabhupada and is now left as our particular legacy to follow Prabhupada's example. I'd just like to say a little bit about the great benefit. We saw that Maharaj Pratiparudra got so much benefit from just reciting a verse about preaching. He got all Lord Chaitanya's mercy. But what about those who do preach? Like, I can think of one person, Prabhupada. There was one personality who was a show businessman in the 60s. He was one of the Beatles. His name was George Harrison. Prabhupada was very fond of George Harrison. He spent a lot of time with him, preaching to him because George Harrison asked Prabhupada, at one point he became so serious, he said to Prabhupada, shall I leave my situation and shave up and join the temple? Now you have to appreciate what a situation was, isn't it? He was one of the most famous people in the world, one of the most richest people in the world. He had the association of the affluent people of that time. He had a lot to lose, and he was prepared to do that. And Prabhupada said, no, you can do more preaching. Stay where you are. And so Prabhupada told him how to preach. He did that with many people, actually. And he told him to write Krishna conscious songs, use his talent in Krishna's service. And he did that. And actually, most of the devotees who joined in England, most of Prabhupada's disciples, you've talked to 90% of them, and they were very much affected by George Harrison's music, because at that time, at the end of the 90s, the beginning of the 70s, this is when he wrote those songs, and that's when most of the Prabhupada disciples came. In fact, you find some of them on their, what is it, mobile, they've got these songs. My Sweet Lord, In the Material World, Here Comes the Sun, they're all there. But they're all songs about Krishna, indirect again. And so, after some time, Lord George Harrison wasn't so affiliated with the movement. People didn't know what had happened. Devotees didn't know what had happened. They seemed to have become estranged. But then, later on, he was still in contact with the three people who originally went to England. That was Mukunda, Shyamasunda, and Gurudas. And so, George Harrison became afflicted by cancer. And towards the end, actually, before I speak about this, when Prabhupada was leaving this world in 1977, Srila Prabhupada, he was on his bike, and he was preaching the Bhagavatam, and all the senior disciples were there, GBCs, doing great service from all around the world. Very powerful preachers, empowered by Prabhupada, Tamil Krishna Goswami, and not to mention them all, but very empowered. And Prabhupada slowly took off his ring. You've probably heard this one before. And he held it up and he gave it to Tamil Krishna Goswami. And he said, give this ring to George, to George Harrison. And so he wasn't even in good standing, as far as the devotees know. But Prabhupada never forgot what he did for this movement. So we should also have that outlook. If I can do a little bit according to my capacity for this movement, then we're never forgotten. We're always doing something to help the preaching. Prabhupada doesn't forget that. And so George Harrison, later, when he became affected by cancer, those three devotees, Mukunda, Shyamasunda and Gurudas, they were there when he left his body. And they said it was very auspicious. They said they were chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. And he left. And so we shouldn't underestimate the power of this, understanding the power of the mood of preaching, what really pleases Prabhupada. Another example, one more example. Prabhupada had one very, very senior disciple. They call him Upendra Prabhu. And he was a brahmachari, but sometimes in brahmachari life, things become a little difficult. And he was his mind was starting to wander. And so Prabhupada wanted to engage him to keep his mind fixed. And he knew this was a very intelligent brahmachari. And so they were in America at the time. And Prabhupada said, I want you to go and preach in Australia. Exactly on the other side of the earth. There's nobody there. And so he said, Prabhupada, I don't want to go to Australia. And Prabhupada kept trying to persuade him. And eventually Prabhupada said, look, if you go to Australia, at the end of life, I'll personally come and take you back to Godhead. And Upendra thought, okay, Prabhupada. And he went to Australia, and he preached there. They started a centre up in Sydney, and then in Melbourne, and things grew from that. And then he went to Auckland in New Zealand, and then to Fiji, and he became the leader of that section. So he did very nice. He followed Prabhupada's instruction. He preached, even though he didn't want to. So this is preaching is usually something we don't want to do. And so, but also Upendra, due to this flickering mind, he eventually left the movement for some time, or he was out of the association of devotees. And then, I don't know the story completely, but eventually they found him. And after some time, he got cancer. Same as George Harrison. And he was bedridden and he couldn't even sit up. And the devotees were there. And I believe that at one point he sat up, even though he was completely bedridden, and he said, "Prabhupada, you've come." And he fell back and left his body. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki jai. Gaura Premanande. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, now another program is starting just now.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. By the Vaishnava's order, we'll be having some more Kata. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Ram. Hare Ram. Ram Ram. Hare Hare. So you can please repeat. Jayo Jayo Sri Chaitanya. Jayo Nityananda. Jayadvaita Chandra Jayo Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jayo Jayo Sri Chaitanya Jayo Nityananda. Jayadvaita Chandra Jayo Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jayo Jayo Sri Chaitanya Jayo Nityananda. Jayadvaita Chandra Jayo Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Om Ajnana Timira.